Hi everybody, I'm Sess Busby, editor of Flying Solo. Welcome to our weekly podcast where we step inside the minds and lives of soloists and small business owners. Charlotte Blair is the founder of Strength Partners and the author of Career Unstuck. She's passionate about helping business owners and their teams to discover and use their strengths to meet their goals and personal objectives. She joins us today to chat about mindset and motivations and shares her top tips to help you and your business keep moving forward and growing. Charlotte, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Sess, for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Ah, my pleasure. It's always nice to welcome an expert to the show. So as someone who helps people find their passion and their purpose in their careers, because our audience is a lot of soloists and small business owners, how would you suggest that they align their work with their personal values and you know, their strengths and passions?
Oh, absolutely. The first step is to discover what they are. I think sometimes, in particularly strengths, people struggle. If you were to ask somebody what their weaknesses are, they can list them out pretty quickly. When you say to somebody, what are your strengths, then they sometimes struggle a little bit with that. And they might name skills, which is okay. They might say, I'm really good at Excel or with PowerPoint or good at talking to people. So for me, taking an assessment like the Clifton Strengths Assessment or Stand Out, there's a couple of strengths-focused assessments out there, are really helpful. That's the first step. Similarly with values, having a list of values to prompt you and think about. I love doing this lovely SORT activity where you have a list of different values or things that are important to you. They might be motivators as well. And I always say to people, pick five and then pick one of those that's the deal breaker for you. If that was not present in your life or in your work, you would really struggle to be motivated and you'd have to kind of walk away. And that's a really revealing activity for some people to go, do you know, yeah, actually, I think that's why I'm struggling at the moment, because that's not present in what I'm doing. I remember working at an organization and humor and fun was something that was really important to me. And I just noticed that it was missing. And that was why I was feeling a little bit disconnected. So I think discovering them first, really identifying them and absolutely spelling them out and naming is the first step. I think if anybody Googles values SORT, they will come up with lots of different ways to identify that. I think there's even assessments out there to discover your values as well. Like I think VIA is another a good one. Values in Action is a good one of identifying what those values might be that are important to you.
So just stepping back a sec, when you were talking about the strengths, you say people often say things like, oh, I'm good at Excel, or, you know, I can type 100 words a minute, or things like that. What do you think strengths really are?
We start with talent first. So talent is a naturally reoccurring pattern of thought, feeling and behaviour. And then when we are productively applying it, then it's a strength. So if we're getting a near perfect performance with that, then it turns out to be a strength. So if I think back when I was at school, every school report I had pretty much said Charlotte talks too much and Charlotte does things too quickly. And so I probably had the talent for communication. And the more I think about investing in it, practicing it, honing it, then it can turn into a strength. If I'm getting a great outcome in terms of getting a message across to people, then that turns into a strength. Otherwise, just, you know, loving doing it is that talent piece. I think there's other clues to talent as well that I love to think about. And that's, when does time fly by? You know, if, for instance, yes, you love doing Excel, you may well have a talent of being analytical. You may be really good at spotting patterns of data. And do you love doing that? Does time fly by when you're doing that? Do you find little glimpses of excellence where you think to yourself, gee, how did I do that so quickly? Are you getting that feeling where you're drawn to it and you go, oh, I want to do that again. That was so amazing. Then there are these little glimpses of talent. When we're in the flow and just, you know, time passes by, then that's when we get to identify little bits of talent. And then when we invest in it, meaning adding knowledge, skill and experience to it, then that's what turns out to be a strength.
So we've talked about the values and the strengths. We've identified the things that we're good at, but how can we know what it is that's actually holding us back? What might be, you know, putting up roadblocks for us or obstacles?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we sort of name that sometimes as weaknesses. We always think about a weakness as something that gets in the way of success. So yes, absolutely. If it was being a roadblock for you, then how do we navigate around that roadblock? So if I take myself as an example, I am not somebody who's particularly analytical. I don't love Excel and I don't love looking at spreadsheets. Does that get in my way of success? I kind of think of it as a flowchart. If yes, what am I going to do about it? If no, don't worry about it, move on. So coming back to the if yes, I could go on some courses to get better at it, but I'm kind of in my early 50s now and I go, I have never gotten any better at it and I've been on lots of courses. It doesn't give me passion. I'm not motivated by it. I don't find it particularly easy. Going on lots of courses, I don't think is going to make a massive difference to me. I might be better partnering with somebody else who does that really easily or outsourcing that, for instance. Now, sometimes in our job, especially if we work within a corporate environment, there are certain things that we have to do. Even now, if I think I'm a solopreneur, I do have to do spreadsheets and I do have to do my accounts, but I find ways to navigate around it or I outsource or I partner it. Whereas sometimes our talents and strengths can actually become a roadblock. So coming back to that communication piece, if I am talking too fast and too much and I'm not listening to what the other person's saying, then that might be a roadblock for me as well. So maybe getting some feedback and intentionally fine-tuning that one may well help us navigate that roadblock as well. So sometimes roadblocks can be moved out of the way and getting other people to help you push that roadblock out the way and leveraging people, especially if you're saying sort of audience, a lot of them are that sort of solopreneur, people not working in a big corporate environment that have lots of support mechanisms, then who do you know? Who's within your network? Do you have mentors, cheer squads? Are there VAs? Are there things that you could outsource, the things that you don't necessarily love doing or have a talent for? But I keep coming back to this word in my head of intentionality. It's like taking a talent to a strength takes intentionality, like intentionally thinking about using it. And I think that's the same when we navigate roadblocks. We've got to stop and think, what's getting in my way? Why is it getting in my way? What are some options that I've got to be able to navigate it? And is it somebody else? Is it a system or process? Like my spelling's pretty shocking. Grammarly is pretty good for me of picking up things, but then sometimes it's not quite enough and, you know, I need to send it to somebody to peer review. I don't always do that because sometimes I'm rushing through things. I go, yeah, no, that's good. And then I spot an error in something afterwards. So I need to be intentional about going, no, stop, Charlotte. Think about sending this to somebody else to peer review. Even if it's my husband or a friend, to just go, hey, can you cast a second eye on this one? So it's having those support systems, partners, other people that can help.
So you have a new book out. It's called Career Unstuck. So firstly, why was it time for you to put all of your knowledge from all your years working with people, coaching people into a book? And secondly, there's a lot of talk about mindset and beliefs in the book. So how can our audience cultivate a mindset that fosters growth and resilience?
So the why, there's a couple of reasons in there. First of all, when I was coaching, so as a sort of strengths coach and an International Coaching Federation coach, when I was coaching people, career would come up a lot, you know, where they were in their life, where they were in their job, didn't have a lot of passion behind it. I often ask the question on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you love your work? And I know love is a very strong word for some people. So I say, change that word to be whatever you like. If it's, you know, satisfied with like instead of love, that's okay. And I was amazed at how low the number was for a lot of people. and they wanted to do something about it, but were not entirely sure how to go about it. And I was stuck in my career at one point, and I thought about some of the books I read, the tools that helped me, the discovering my strengths, discovering my values, finding my why, having support mechanisms behind me, reevaluating my mindset. I found myself time and time again after coaching, sending people emails with some of these resources. And I was like, oh, I should put these into one place like a workbook. It also coincided, well, not coincided. I would share with a lot of people how I had worked in a corporate, I've always been a big corporate girl up until the last 10 years. And I would share how I didn't go to university. I'm not a CEO of a big organization, but I worked my way up through different organizations. And then I went off and started my own business and a couple of my own businesses. And people would say to me, wow, Charlotte, that's really inspiring. You should write a book. So there were two things sort of came together of, yeah, you should write a book. And I was like, I can't write a book. I'm dyslexic. You know, it would be impossible. And then, oh, I send out a lot of these resources. And then for the last 4 years, I found it on my list of things to do. I would write my goals at the beginning of the year, and there it was, write a book, and I never got it done. So with my coach, I sat down and sort of wanted to explore this of why was it there and why did it never get done. And I realized it was because I didn't know how to write a book. So I reached out to a few people that had written a book, and they connected me with Kelly Irving and the expert author community. And then I got a structure and a process and a cheer squad behind me to write the book. So that's kind of how and why it came about. This piece about mindsets, though, again, I had a mindset of I am dyslexic, I can't write a book. There's probably even a bit of a mindset in there of who am I to write a book? You know, I'm not Sheryl Sandberg. I'm not the CEO of an organization. I've not been a partner at KPMG or PwC. Who's little old me that's just your average worker within an average organization that happened to start her own company? Who's going to read my book? So I probably had my own limiting belief, a mindset there. And then you talk to people and go, no, they would absolutely read it. And I know with feedback from people saying, wow, that, you know, that advice that you gave me or those tips or those recommendations that you gave me really helped me, helped shift my mindset. And I had also, with my coach, explored my mindset. And I think trying to move it from a limiting belief, something that's stopping you, being that roadblock, to an enabling belief, and just literally writing that down, I can't write a book, to I can write a book if I have a mechanism and a support system behind me. Dyslexia doesn't need to be something that's getting in my way. It can actually be a superpower because I have to find new creative ways to do things. So I've got something on my signature that says, you know, expect curious spelling and curious ideas. So those things that might help me back also help support me. So I think number one, people identifying, like you say, some of those roadblocks, the things that might be stopping them. And I really believe that everybody needs a coach. And I'm not just saying that because I am a coach, but having somebody else to talk things through with, be a thinking partner, help identify what some of those things might be and some options to move forward. I always love in coaching the kind of methodology or modality that we use around grow. So what's the goal? What's the reality? What are the options that you've got? And what's the way forward? And sometimes when we start in the reality of what's going on, what's getting in my way, and then where do I want to be and how can I help get there? A coach is really good at having a structure and a flow to help you navigate some of those things. Now, for some people, yes, a counselor or therapy is useful. But I always think about counselors are more past based. If you want to explore, you know, your past, or it could be something to do with your childhood or a traumatic experience or any sort of experience that's getting in the way, a counselor is really good to explore that. A coach is really good to help you explore where you want to be and how you could go about getting there. So counselors are past orientated, coaches are a little bit more future orientated. But again, naming the imposter in your head or naming the limiting belief helps give a voice to it. And then thinking about reframing it is super powerful in terms of starting on the journey forward.
Mm. That imposter in your head you're just talking about, imposter syndrome seems to be more and more common these days, particularly amongst entrepreneurs and business owners. So how do we recognize that actually it's just a voice? You can turn it off. There's ways to manage it. And how can we be more confident about pursuing our goals?
Yeah, as you said, turn it off. Sometimes I go, no, turn it up. Like, turn it up and have a conversation with it. Like, address it. I think everybody has imposter syndrome. And when I say this, I go, everybody has it. You know, I think there was some research done by Dr. Gail Matthews of the Dominican University of California. And they did some study and to look into, you know, the commonality of imposter syndrome and found that on average was about 70% of respondents. But I kind of joke and say, well, I think some of the others are lying. I think we all have this little feeling of being inadequate or not good enough, or even if we're amazing at our work, I think we all have a little voice. And sometimes turning around and thanking that voice for trying to keep us safe is useful, but also acknowledging that being safe is not always where growth happens. Sometimes we need to navigate out of our growth zone. And this is where it comes back to having an amazing support crew and cheer squad with you, behind you, next to you is really powerful. So I think it's identifying that there's actually nothing wrong with you. Don't necessarily turn the voice off, but have a conversation with it. I'm a big believer in naming the voices in our head. I always think about that movie. I think there's a second version of the Pixar movie Inside Out, where Riley, the main character, little girl, she's being forced in a way to move. Her parents have decided they're going to move states, and she has to leave her friends. And she's got these little voices in her head, and she's got, you know, anger and sadness and joy and fear, and you know, they're all having their little conversations in the head. So to be able to acknowledge that we have these voices in our head, whether it be the perfectionist, whether it be the naysayer, you know, identify your own little characters within your head that might be, you know, driving the bus. I think of this thing of, you know, these characters driving the bus, and who do you actually want driving the bus? Maybe it needs to be the wise owl that is driving the bus, that acknowledges the people in the bus and say, hey, you know, kind of pipe down at the moment. We've got this. We're going in this direction. We'll be fine. So I think that's that piece about naming the voices inside our head and having a conversation with them and understanding that actually there's nothing wrong with you. Everybody feels like this at some point. I was like, so I heard another coach refer to it as imposter syndrome. It's like, it's as normal as breathing in and out, but we don't turn around and say, I've got breathing in and out syndrome. So we all have it at some point. I'd love to hear from somebody that says, I never have it.
I don't really have it.
Do you never have moments of doubt?
No, not really. I don't know whether it's because I was always told I could do whatever I want or be whatever I wanted to be. Like, I honestly, I don't have a voice in my head going, you can't do that, or you're not good enough, or I don't.
I don't have a voice in my head that says you're not good enough. I think occasionally I would have I love this. I love finding somebody, you know, like yourself. You're obviously within that 30% that says, no, I'm absolutely fine. And I think about one of the Clifton strengths of being self-assurance, relatively high self-assurance. But my activator goes, hey, let's just jump in and give it a go. What's the worst that can happen? So I think sometimes being able to think about, yeah, you know, I'm going to grow from this. What's the worst that's going to happen? Helps us be a little bit brave. So, you know, maybe you're one of these people that's brave and yes, we're brought up with, yeah, you can do anything that you want to do. But I think some people do let it hold them back. Whereas if we just take a little step forward, it helps. I don't think I've been held back from anything. But I do have doubt sometimes, but I've got to have that conversation with myself and say, hey, yeah, you're not gonna die from this. So let's give it a go. Well, if there was something I was gonna die from, then I probably wouldn't. I might have limiting beliefs of, you know, swimming in shark infested waters, but you know, maybe that's a self preservation. But I'm thinking about some of the other things where the voice inside your head stops people from moving forward. But so I guess, you know, when I think about the imposter syndrome, it's more will be useful for people who do feel like it stops them, as opposed to the people that don't feel like it stops them.
Yeah, I guess I always think if there's something I don't know, I can learn it, or if there's something I haven't tried, I can give it a go.
Oh, absolutely. So they are enabling beliefs. You have a growth mindset that is an enabling belief, and a great example of a growth mindset, where some people have that fixed mindset and the limiting beliefs is what's getting in the way of going, I can't learn this, versus, oh, I can learn this. So that's exactly what we would love more people to be thinking about of, yeah, okay, maybe I can't do this at the moment, but I can learn about it and then maybe I can do it.
Yeah, I think I probably might tend to the reckless side as well, the police. We had a burglar at our house once and I came home and encountered them and chased them out of the house. And the police said I'm like one of 5% of people that would actually not freeze or flee, that go into fight mode.
Yeah, wow, I love that. I think there's something else that pops up for me when you're saying about that kind of freeze flight mode. I love David Rock's scarf model for kind of that, like thinking about what's most likely to have us go into fight, flight or freeze mode.
I'm not familiar with him. Could you explain that a bit more?
Yeah, sure. So he's from the Neuro Leadership Institute. When did a lot of research in terms of how our brain responds in certain situations. And he came up with this scarf model that identifies five different, I guess, triggers for some people. And he talks about threat, meaning that fight, flight or freeze response, or a reward response that you want to move towards and get more of. So the S is for status. So sometimes we might sort of go into our threat mode if we feel like our status has been challenged. Then we've got certainty, so how we're able to predict the future or certain about different situations. A stands for autonomy, so how we have, freedom over something when you don't get to choose maybe even the work that you do, you know, that, or where you sit. They're very sort of simple things we might feel sort of threatened towards that, or when we have more autonomy, then we feel better and more rewarded. The R stands for relatedness, so how related we feel to people and the connections that we have with them. You know, oh, we might come from the same town or the same country, or, you know, both have dogs or both keep bees, or, you know, whatever we find that we have in common, there's some sort of relatedness there. And then the last one is fairness. We might be triggered if something feels sort of unfair, or if it feels incredibly fair, then we sort of get that reward. Now, I'm not sure how that relates to your burglar instance, Cess, in terms of, you know, why you might challenge them. Maybe it's something to do with the, you know, the status in there of, hey, this is my house, get out, who do you think you are, or this is not fair. I don't know. But I just like thinking about that model as a way to help people identify what might make them move into that fight, flight or freeze mode, and then kind of, you know, move the dial across. If I think back to that movie, the Pixar movie, we've got, you know, anger. He would explode. He'd be all right, but he would explode when it was a kind of a code red alert. And sometimes when there's a number of triggers, then that's when we kind of either explode, fight, or kind of go and just freeze if a number of those scarf model elements are triggered.
Well, we've probably got a bit off track there with my my little story. So back to the topic at hand. For our business owners, we've talked a little bit about balancing you know, your aspirations, with your priorities and having resources behind you to help you grow and that type of thing. When you're a business owner, you often don't have the resources if you're a small business owner. So how can you make sure that you're still, you know, getting that balance right so that you're able to continue to grow and grow your business?
Yeah, I guess I can only think about this in terms of my own experience or experience with other small business owners that I've worked with. I think there's a lot of power in the community behind you. So even if you go, look, I can't afford to pay a PA or a VA. I don't have, somebody to do my marketing. I think there's a lot of power in this concept of the cheer squad. You know, there may be other small business owners in an area that they work in. So if I think about the coaches, the Gallup Strengths coaches that I'm part of, I think it's an incredibly collaborative community of people sharing ideas and resources and, you know, even coming together in little masterminds. Now, none of that costs any money, but it's amazing the power that's behind that. There are some people who end up working together, maybe putting a pitch and proposal together, maybe delivering work together. So depending on what type of work they work in, you know, are there other people in their network that instead of seeing them as a threat or seeing them as competitors, you know, might they be, what if we had an abundance mentality, might they be collaborative partners and an opportunity? That's one. Another one that I've seen has worked quite well for people is bartering systems. Like, I'm a massive fan of bartering in particular. Like, I love bartering produce. I've always got excess, I don't know, tomatoes or beans or zucchinis or eggs. And I've got a little box at the end of my driveway and I sort of say, hey, want to swap with something? Somebody will take away the zucchinis and leave me with some rhubarb. I love that concept of, what do I have that you might find useful and what do you have that I might find useful? So I remember swapping coaching before for an SEO audit, search engine optimization audit, or, you know, somebody else did some Canva designs for me in return for something else. So, you know, is there that bartering opportunity out there as well? There's some things that kind of pop to mind, but I'm not a business coach, as in I can't profess to have a whole toolkit of things that you could do, but they are things that really help me. And that kind of comes back to that cheer squad and building a tribe of people around you, because I believe that together we achieve more.
So how would you suggest, if I'm a soloist, that I cultivate those kind of connections? Because I might be feeling a little isolated, you know, working from home, perhaps not in a shared workspace. How do I start making those connections?
Yeah, I think online. Like, I work from home. I'm sitting in my office here at the moment in Kyneton. I live in very rural Kyneton and there isn't a shared office space anywhere near me. I do remember when I used to go into Melbourne, I loved the NAB village there because that was a co-working space. But I think being able to cultivate those online. I was just this morning doing a workshop with a group of other coaches and thinking about mind mapping your network. So if you put you in the middle of that network and you draw a little circle around the outside, who are those people within your inner core network? The people that if you picked up the phone and said, hey, it's me, they know, oh, hey, Charlotte, you know, how are you? So who are those people that I could reach out to? And then maybe even ask them, hey, who else do you know that I could reach out to? And then you've got your outer core of the people that you might sort of say, hey, it's me, we met at. And you might need to give the context of, you know, where you met, and then sort of reach out to them. Hey, can we have a virtual coffee catch up online? I think the other thing there is thinking about similarly, like, I'm a big lover of LinkedIn. I don't think it's as good as it used to be because so many people now send you a connection and then immediately try and sell you something afterwards, and that I don't like that so much. But just connecting with people that have something that you would find useful. Maybe they write articles that you go, I really love their voice, or I love what they share. I think even looking and going, well, if my area of business is a physiotherapist, let me have a look on LinkedIn. Is there a group for physiotherapists? And maybe they're in my city, but maybe they're all the way around the world. And sometimes making the ask of putting the question out there, hey, is anybody else interested in joining a mastermind to share tools and techniques? Or it can be lonely working on your own. Anybody else interested in doing this? I think there are a lot of groups out there on places like LinkedIn, on places like meetup.com that are already existing in certain areas of field. And I'm a big believer, if you don't ask, you don't get. So at least put the ask out there and say, hey, this is something I'm interested in. Is anybody else interested in? And then we sort of start that connection, and sometimes it grows from there. Like, I'm really excited that in June I'm heading over to Omaha, where Gallup have their conference, and I love meeting up with other people over there, and I wanted to have an opportunity for coaches to be able to connect, share, and learn together. And so I kind of said, hey, who else is interested in that? And this year, we started it last year and we had 60 people. This year it's 100 people. And these are people from all over the world that just want to kind of learn and share from each other. Now, I don't know if that's coaching community or whether there are other industries, but that was just the appetite for other people to be able to connect and learn with and from each other is huge. And I'm sure that exists within other industries as well.
Do you think that has increased post-pandemic, that there's this hunger now for connection?
I think so, yes. I used to work in the city on site a lot more than I do now. I think the plus side of COVID was that it opened up opportunities to do work virtually. Like, I do a lot of coaching over Zoom or Teams or WebEx now with people across the world that I might not have done before. So that's a kind of plus side that it's opened it up. But by the same token, a lot of people say, well, we don't need to spend the time driving and meeting up. Hey, let's do this over, sort of virtually. So I think there's pros and cons to it. I would always much rather be face to face with somebody than I would just over a, little Logi camera. But in the absence of nothing, I think it's great. Like, I built some amazing new connections and friendships over COVID that I never thought that I would have done. So 100%, I think it's changed. What makes it even more special is when you then have built a relationship with somebody 6 months, a year, and then you get to meet them in person. It's like an amazing, oh my God, I can't believe that we're meeting, but that could just be me. I'm a very socially courageous person and love meeting new people. Not everybody might have that response to it.
I think we're just about out of time, Charlotte. I'm sorry to be drawing this conversation to a close, but just one last question, I guess, for our listeners who maybe might be struggling a little bit finding fulfillment in what they do. How can they turn things around?
Well, I think there's a number of different ways of doing that. I guess I would plug my book. It sounds a bit kind of self-centered to go, well, there's a reason why I wrote that book, to be able to help people get unstuck. And some people have said to me, well, but Charlotte, this book's quite good even if you're not stuck in your career. Maybe if you're stuck in your relationship or you're stuck in something else, if you're not feeling it, the reason I wrote it, as practical as it is, that it's got tools, techniques, questions to ask yourself, other books that I would recommend, like, I'm not an expert on mindset around money, but I recommended Jackie Clark's, Stop Worrying About Money book in there. So that, for the cost of $20, in fact, if they ordered it today, then it's only $20 with postage and packing. That might give them some tips and tools and techniques. But otherwise, my first step would be, what's one action that you could take? What is it that's creating you to be stuck? And what's one action that if you took today, who's one person that you could reach out to that would help you? Then at least you're making a step in the right direction. You know, could I go on to what is that action going on to LinkedIn and seeing who I could connect with? Is that action reaching out to three people that I've identified in my network as might be very happy to support me? I think the one thing that really strikes me is we often fear asking the question. I doubt, Cess, that you fear this because you sound like quite a bold person. But I think a lot of people fear asking for help or asking the question because they don't want to upset somebody else or disturb somebody else. But as humans, we love helping each other. So I often help people think about who are you depriving the opportunity to feel good today by not asking for their help. Somebody says, hey, Charlotte, do you think you could help me in this area? That makes me feel good. So, you know, by not asking me, you're sort of depriving me that opportunity. Now, I can't help everybody for free all the time, but there are little things that I could do or little bits of snippets or advice or connections that I could make. So I guess my last piece of advice is, you know, you don't ask, you don't get. Just reach out to one person who might be able to help you.
Hmm. Small steps, and if you don't ask, then you don't get. Lovely, lovely advice. Thank you so much, Charlotte. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Pleasure.